Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody, to the official space section of the Charter.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order!
Thank you for coming back on the show. This is super awesome to talk to you about the retailer. How did it land in your lap?
No, they reached out to me. And because out here in Vancouver, it's mainly series that are being shot.
Okay.
And they had a feature pop up, and I'm known as a feature designer. Well, now I'm known as both because I've built up my repertoire, if you will, out here.
Yeah.
With some great series. So it was Brian Parker, who had done Jesse James back in Winnipeg.
Oh, okay.
So he recognized my name and asked if I'd be interested. He was the first one to reach out to me. I guess I'm kind of known for doing period that's not too over the top, if you will.
Sure. Yeah. And like when he told you it was set in the 80s, was that something that excited you, or was that something that you felt might have been maybe a challenge?
Interesting question. At first, when I spoke to my agent, I was like, I lived the 80s. I'm not sure that I want to revisit the behavior that, you know, we did in the 80s. But Kiernan really nails a lot of it in the film with her sarcastic remarks. And, you know, those were the things that we were doing and saying. But I embraced it. I used my own high school yearbooks as part of my lookbooks that I presented to the producers and essentially to Amazon for final approval. I went to Vincent Massey High School. I graduated in 85.
Let's start with your process on this. Like, did you come up with some ideas before you saw the script? Did they give you the script and give you an idea of what was going on? Where did you start working?
I always start with the script. I read it. I read it a couple times. I make notes as I'm reading it. I'm old fashioned. I have to print it out and highlight and scribble and
sure, yeah.
Turn it into a hot mess. I'll even have been known to take them into the bathtub with me. You know, I put it all in the brain and then I start thinking. And for me, and when I first spoke with Nahashtakhan, she's the director from Fresh Off the Boat. She really, really wanted something that wasn't going to be silly. And I had said to her, you know, there's a fine line between character and caricature. And I've said this often, you push that envelope a little too hard and it looks like a cartoon.
Sure.
So it was very, very important for us to stay middle America, if you will. Mainstream America was New York and Los Angeles and Janet Jackson. I think I've mentioned David Bowie and, you know, the little Brat Pack if that was around back then.
Yeah.
We didn't want the giant shoulder pads and the asymmetrical stuff and the hot colors. And we even took the hair down a little bit we still did some big earrings, but not, you know, I was there used to be a bar called Strawberries, where Shapes is.
Oh, I remember. I vaguely remember.
Oh, you remember. Okay.
Yeah, just a little bit, but I was there for it.
And, you know, we dressed
the
part back in 86, 87. So I really, really remembered. And I also have, there's a Strawberries, there's a Strawberries page that a bunch of us have joined.
Really?
And people have been sharing pictures, and it's like, oh yeah. So I did pull from that Facebook page as well to show the hairstyles and what we were wearing to dance and drink shooters too while I was bartending. Yeah. You
know? Art imitating life, essentially, as they say, right?
Exactly.
No, I came into this because it's horror month and I don't watch enough horror. So when you told me about it, I was like, okay, cool. And the premise is amazing. The humor is so ingrained in not only some of the clothing, but the jokes that I love the most were where is Kira? Is that how we say it?
Kiernan.
Thank you. Yeah. She's, who is she? She's Mad Men, I believe. And she was also, Nancy Drew. Did she do the Nancy Drew stuff?
She was the Sabrina.
That's it.
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Yeah.
Sorry, she's a witch, not a detective. Okay, I got it.
That's okay. But yeah, she definitely started on Mad Men, and she had that sarcasm even back then as a small child.
How was working with her in the leather jacket? Let's start with that leather jacket.
Okay.
Because that's the singular piece that ties her and her mom together. It travels throughout the film. Was that an off the shelf thing? Was that something where did we find this piece?
No. Greg Blagojev of Soldier, SZOLDIER. He's down in the Exchange District in Winnipeg.
Nice. Okay.
He was, when I had a vintage store there, I was on the third floor. He was on the sixth or seventh. So we got to know each other, and he does incredible leather work. So I reached out to him, and I worked with an artist called Aubrey Deachin and another artist, Morgan Kroon. And we came up with some concepts. For me, it was Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It was Sloane Peterson's jacket.
Yeah.
For other people, it was Can't Buy Me Love.
Sure.
And I think it was scripted as Can't Buy Me Love. And even though I remember seeing that film, and I did watch it again to you know, get back into it. For this film, it was always Sloane Peterson for me. Her jacket was really giant, though. It had the giant shoulder pads, it was a little bit longer. So we tailored it. I designed it to be, the shoulder pads were closer to the body, and it was cropped, and I cropped the fringe so that when we did the action, it wasn't getting all tangled and... precisely. But it still had that flow. Somebody the other day, I've been doing interviews all week, thankfully, you know, they like my work, but somebody said it reminded them of Stevie Nicks and the flow that she does when she's on stage. And it's
totally.
Like, oh, that's an interesting take, but totally. I can't stop saying the word totally this week either.
It's gnarly. It's radical, right? Like, it's the language of the times. Did you have a lot of pieces in your own collection, or was a lot of this stuff shopped vintage, like you said? Or
I'm not a big fan of collecting 80s. I collect true vintage. I'm doing the 20s, 30s, 40s. That's always been my jam.
Purist.
So exactly. I did have a couple things, but we started in Vancouver and cleaned out Vancouver, because for me, it's about finding real pieces and not trying to fake it. We did have to fake it a little bit with some of the mollies, because like when they die, because you're not going to find 8 vintage pieces all exactly the same.
Yeah. I was waiting to get to that, because that would have been tough.
It was, and I'll tell you a story in a sec, but we went all through Vancouver, and then I headed to the Pasadena flea market, the Rose Bowl flea market in Pasadena, pardon me. Which is like, 200 vendors under the same roof. And we dropped a lot of money, and they kind of knew that I was coming, because what I do is I'll hook up with people on Instagram. People have been following me for years. I've been following them. Hey, I'm coming to town. Bring out your best 80s. And then we started to go down the Pacific Coast Highway. We hit Oceanside, where they shoot Animal Kingdom.
Oh, cool.
It's quite small, but I was really shocked. They had this warehouse, pardon me, called Sea Hive Market. And walked in there, and it was like we walked into the 80s. And then the jacket that Amelia wears, the rainbow jacket.
Yeah.
That was there. We picked that up. That was a new piece. Because of the film, they have reissued the jacket, that jacket. I'll send you the notes on it. And people are lining up to buy it, the Amelia rainbow jacket. And I'm getting a lot of response about the leather jacket too. But anyway, so I made my way all the way down to San Diego, and there's killer vintage picking in San Diego. Oh, yeah. And stopped at all the little vintage shops along the way. And we made Laguna Beach our home base, because it was beautiful. And we just kind of branched out from Laguna and hit everywhere we possibly could, Orange County, everywhere. And shipped everything back to Vancouver and had a giant stock that we played with. The fun part was we would see pieces that were the mollies and, oh, gotta get that. Not knowing how it was all going to come together, but... that's a Molly piece. That's a Molly piece. You know what I mean? It was a lot of fun.
With these Mollies, now that we're talking about them, I have to ask, like, was that always in the script? Because
they were there.
They were there?
Yeah, they were there. They were written in. right from the get-go, which was another reason why I really, really liked the film. Any John Hughes film, I think I've seen 10,000 times as a child or youth. And even now, I'll go back and watch 16 Candles or Pretty in Pink or
She's The Breakfast an icon, Club. Right?
It's iconic films. And so to be able to pull looks from all of those films and search for key pieces to make the Heather, the Marissa, the Pam, all look like that, right? And Tiffany. Tiffany's dress we made because, you know, she dies on that waterbed and blood went everywhere. I think we had 8 of them. They did it with one. So we had 7 clean dresses afterward, but we were ready.
No kidding. When
I did Siberia with Keanu Reeves in Winnipeg a couple of years ago, many years ago, Molly Ringwald played his wife. And she was always the woman that he had the cell phone and he was talking to on the phone. So I had the opportunity to meet Molly and to talk about how she changed the world of fashion for myself and for my generation. Because she really was the one that started making vintage cool. And, you know, where you would, the little glasses, the pearls, the little hats, like everything that she did was vintage and fantastic.
When you say that you watched Sloane from Ferris Bueller, what else did you watch to kind of get in the mood of all of this? Were there some other movies or would you just stick with Ferris and kind of play in that?
No, I watched Ferris. I watched Can't Buy Me Love. I went back and watched a lot of John Hughes. and, you know, somebody asked me, well, which killer movies did you watch? And I said, well, I didn't, because we're creating our own killer.
Yeah.
And he had to be different. I didn't want him to look like Freddy or Jason or Michael Myers, or I wanted him to be different.
I really loved how iconic it was, like the T-shirt, the jacket, the big mask. Like, where did we get that mask?
I'm so glad you noticed all of those things. I worked with Tony Gardner. We worked with Tony Gardner from All Terrain. Tony, you may know, created Chucky with Don Mancini.
Okay.
I think he's an executive producer on the Chucky series as well. Tony was hired to build the mask, and because we were friends, we had a great time coming up with some stuff together. That mask, I know everybody says Max Headroom. It was a combo. It was Max Headroom, it was Dolph Lundgren, and it was Rob Lowe.
Okay, I think I can see the forehead for Lundgren. You've definitely got the hair and the earring for Headroom. And then you've got the nice jawline. Like the
jaw.
Yeah, the jaw. Yeah. Very Rob Lowe.
And actually, the earring was Rob Youngblood's. Is that when he was wearing?
He was in Youngblood's.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a lot of fun.
And then the T-shirt was, well, I went with a James Dean silhouette for the killer. I naturally liked the idea of a bomber jacket, and I liked the idea of the dark denim with the cuff and the
It's very
the
rebel
boots
without a cause. It's very rebel.
It's super rebel. And the T-shirt was something that we all talked about. It had to be something iconic. It had to be something that was a nod to the 80s, but it also had to be something that when the blood was flying, you could see it. So we created that graphic.
It's very Don Johnson. Pardon? It's very Miami Vice, right?
That's exactly what it is. So we ripped off Don Johnson, leaning against an old vintage car with a palm tree and the sunset behind it. It's totally not Don Johnson. We created our own logo, but there are nods to it so that people will go, aha.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that like it is. It's not pretending that it's not co-opting from other stuff, but it is its own thing. And that's what was so much fun about it. It's like how they made Rick and Morty, right? They kind of took Back to the Future, but then they did their own thing with it. And what's fun about this one is that you go from a killer. You go from these actual bloody moments to these incredibly fun moments on screen. And that's what makes it its own. When you're like, you've done so many things. You've done period pieces. You've done contemporary. What's horror like in regards to that genre and building costumes for horror? Is there something that's more challenging? Is there something that you like? I mean, we all would assume that everything's getting stabbed and blood on it. So, like you do build 8 to 10 versions of the costume, but mm-hmm. in the process 12. Of coming, sure, 12, but in that process, when you go into the horror genre, how do you prepare for that? Is there anything different?
It's very different because you're possibly creating a cult classic and you want to make something memorable for people. The Grudge, when I did that, that was a challenge because the first Grudge had done so well.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Here we were trying to recreate the wheel, if you will, and it wasn't well received. Unfortunately, we worked really hard on that. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. The Chucky franchise, that is a staple that's always going to be there. And that was the most fun I've ever had working on horror. Dawn and I spend a lot of time watching Hitchcock together. and for me, it's Hitchcock, it's Polanski, it's intellectual horror, is this The Changeling, Damien, The Omen.
Yeah,
those kind of films. I think I'm trying to help bring those back so that there's less slashing and more going, or more jump scares or... So it makes it challenging for the wardrobe in the sense that you want to come up creatively with something new, something that people are going to recognize, something that might be made into a Funko Pop doll one day.
You've got to think about those things now. I didn't even think of that. Like,
you do.
There is so much merch kicking around, props and whatnot, that get replicated and recreated for rooms like mine where I put all this stuff. And you don't even think about how this will live on. What's a Blumhouse production like versus the other horrors that you've worked on? Is he very hands-on? Is he far removed behind the scenes? Like, that man is moving so many different films at once. I imagine he was just a conversation.
Jason, he had a lot on the go. So I never got to actually meet him in person. His franchise is really growing and it's doing really, really well because he is bringing intellectual, psychological horror back to the screen. And he's just a very, very busy guy. So working for him in comparison to working with Universal, or I'm trying to remember some of the other that we worked with, they are more hands-on. Jason just kind of let us, he approved everything. We made sure that he had final say, but he trusted us, which was really kind of amazing.
That's kind of what I'm wondering, right? Because like he's doing, I've watched almost everything he's done for Amazon. I'm so glad he's going to deal with Amazon because they're never the same. They're all fun. There's some sort of hook or element that takes you outside of the normal realm of a slasher movie or a jump scare or any of those things. It makes you think. And I just wonder, is that someone who's so incessantly on top of it, or is that someone who just knows how to hire the right people? And it sounds like because you worked on it, he knows how to hire the right people.
He knew how to, well, and not just me, there was Notch and Chloe Yellen and Greg and Adam Hendrickson and Greg, sorry, I'm just losing it. I've been talking too much this week. He put his trust into all four of those people who were the creatives behind watching and making sure that everything was going the way it should. You know, the Gravitron is something that Notch fought for. She really, really, really fought for that because we had to look, where were we going to, we had a certain amount of money to work with and where were we going to take from? Like, every film is like this, folks. What are we going to take away to make it work? And she really, I'm glad she fought hard for that. And I think she ended up going to Jason for that as well. Saying this must be into Amazon. And she was right. I don't think the film would have done as well as it has without the Gravitron.
It really is. Like, three or four of us have watched it. Me and Jimmy have been telling everybody about it. Like, it's a fun movie. It's a fun romp. It's almost a family horror movie, if you will. Like, it's got all these weird things to it. What was the challenge? What was hard about this? What was something that when we look on screen, we'll never know how hard you worked, but we can find out now?
Yeah, challenge is not my favorite word.
Okay. Success.
I didn't find any challenges, but tasks, I guess, things that I wanted to achieve. And that was telling the story between contemporary times with Amelia and her photo booth and the 80s and showing that vast, vast difference. with the 80s, we stuck with a color palette that was softer, the pinks, the light blues, the light teals. On our Mollies, they had the teals and the ivories and the lace. But even with our background, we made sure that they followed that color palette as well. We had preppy kids. We had jock kids.
You know,
every high school still has them. And then when we did the Gen Z, you mentioned it earlier about what the kids are wearing today. And not only are they doing the 90s, but they're now doing Y2K.
Sure. I just remember the internet was going to blow up. I don't know what everybody was wearing.
The biggest thing today that we can't keep on the shelves in our little vintage shops is the granny sweatshirts with the little kitties on the front. Sure. Oh my gosh, they just die for that stuff. And the florals again. So, but what we did with the Gen Z is we popped them with color. And you see that in Amelia's jacket, the jewel tones, the brighter, more predominant colors. Because we were using the same classrooms, but quickly switching around the set design and the set decoration and the costumes and, you know, moving it around to play 90s and, pardon me, to play Gen Z, which was very 90s, and then the 80s, 1987. So I think that was my biggest challenge. I had a big team, a big, wonderful team, and I had a really, really great group of people who were my background coordinators, and they really, really helped. I think there was 18 to 20 of us.
Holy shit. That is a big department.
Yeah. It takes a lot of people to make these films. That's the big difference coming from Winnipeg, where I had an 8-person department. I just finished Under the Bridge for Disney and I had a 25-person department.
Wow.
So yeah, that was the challenge.
Okay.
Was the challenge.
Can we talk about
different
that yet, or is that something we got to wait to talk about?
Pardon?
I said, is that something we got to wait to talk about?
No, that's fine. It's lots of different personalities, more people on the team, people that I didn't know because I was relatively new. I've only been here for 4.5 years. Building another team and making it work. And I have, and they've got some really, really great people that stand with me on my projects now. I'm super happy out here.
What's your favorite Molly out of the four, including Julie
Olivia.
Bowen, including Julie Bowen in the end when
yeah.
she calls out her mom and says, are you dressed like Molly Ringwald?
Again. Yeah. That's interesting because we did Breakfast Club for Julie when she was handing out the Halloween candy. And we did that on purpose. I had said to Notch is our director, by the way, I don't know if I've mentioned that. I said to her, that is the most subdued out of all the Molly looks.
It's very low key.
So Kiernan,
right? Yeah.
Slash Jamie can come in there and go, why aren't you dressed for Halloween? Oh, but I am. I'm Molly Ringwald from the Breakfast Club. So we built that entire costume because Julie Bowen wanted to do a lot of her own stunts and we had to make it very, very practical for her to roll on the floor. So we made a wrap skirt and gave her lace-up boots that gave her some stability in her ankles. And we made the top that had dolman sleeves so we could hide low-profile padding underneath it so she could actually be thrown against the wall.
Yep, wouldn't have noticed any of that. And I love that she loves to do her own stunts. That's fun. Is that something that you do a lot? Like, I've never really even thought of that, actually. Like, modifying a costume for a stunt is the last thing that goes through my mind. You modify the set, you modify the safety, you do all those things. But, like, do you find that the stunt department comes to you after and they're like, what can you help me? Can you help me? I've got some problems.
Yeah, for sure. That's happened many, many times when they haven't discussed with us. But I did nobody.
Yeah.
And I got to sit down with Greg Remanter and I called him into meetings. And I remember in the beginning, he'd be like, why is costumes calling me into meetings? It's like, we need to talk about this now because you have to cut holes in the costumes. They're going to have rigs on them underneath, like jerk vests and things like that, that have wires that are then, you know, CGI'd out later. And they have to be put in strategic places so that these people can be flown back fast or thrown against a wall
sure,
or pulled
yeah,
out of
yeah.
a car, thrown off a building. And I remember when I first started and I was a truck costumer and I'd get called down to set and they would say, well, you only have one costume and we need to put holes in it. I'd be like, oh my gosh, what? what?
Yeah.
So I've learned a lot over the years, and I've learned to have multiples and to have many, many, many conversations with the stunt department. The Skeen brothers, or Rick Skeen and his sons, I should say. Which I think Rick has maybe taken a step back now, and Sean
I think
and Banner.
Sean's the one who's heading the operation.
Yeah, and you know, I can remember when those guys were little kids coming up, and learned a lot from their dad and his brother Craig as well.
I was there besides Julie. Was anybody else you'd have to modify for stunts?
Every single one of them. So when we threw, well, Tiffany, I guess. No, we didn't, because that was just all actor action. And then she ended up in a different, because Jamie changed time a bit, she ended up in a different place than she was supposed to. She ended up in the garage, I believe.
Okay, yep.
Instead of on the waterbed.
Yep.
And then was it Heather that we threw down the stairs? Forgive me, it's been a year and a half.
No, you're right. Jamie was the first one to die in the waterbed. Heather was thrown down the stairs.
Tiffany. Yeah.
Jennifer was thrown down the stairs.
So what I went with was contemporary leggings and a contemporary sweatshirt that had all the color palette that we needed, and then we altered it, but I think we shortened the sleeves, we shortened it a little bit in the body, but then we gave it that 80s cut across the top, and we had to be very careful because we had to put a lot of stunt padding on her and the stunt performer, and we had to, there was a jerk vest involved with D-rings and wires to, you know, throw her off the stairs. And then there was Marissa, who gets it in the the Hall of Horrors.
Yeah, that was the other one.
That was insanely gross and good. That's an existing thing at the PNE, by the way. Interesting story. I know it's not costumes, but it was the first time I was ever invited to go on a location scout. First time in my entire career. Tech survey, and I was like, yeah, bring it on, because I wanted to see all these dead bodies and things hanging. Yeah. I had to dress all the kids like those zombie things that were in that haunted house.
Oh boy.
So that they could hide in that old movie theater in there.
Yep.
When the killers comes through. So I had to see what this guy had already done. So we're at the PNE, and for some reason we could not get into the PNE. I think it wasn't available to us. I think they actually brought the Gravitron and brought a bunch of rides in beside the PNE.
Okay.
And when they were doing their first location scout, Liz Kay is our production designer, wonderful woman. And she points to this house, this weird thing. And she goes, what's that? And I guess the guy leading the tour says, well, I guess I can take you in there. Open the door, and it's some guy that's been doing this forever on his own, and he has built every single gag, every single monster, mummy, zombie. You have to watch the movie again to see what I'm talking about. This guy, I don't know his name, but he built everything, and we just used it. We flew some walls so that we could get the camera in. And we changed a couple of the sets that he had built in there so that we could fit our cast in there properly. But basically, it was an existing house of horrors. I can't remember, haunted house, halls of horrors, something like that.
That's so cool.
That existed that nobody was really talking about, and we just found it.
Do you have a hard time? I mean, with nobody, obviously everybody's getting beaten up, things get ripped, things get all banged to shit. And I've asked you before about being married to pieces, but in horror though, does it break your heart just that much more knowing that it's just blatant stabbing and ripping and all that stuff? Like it's still easy to just let it all go to shit after and be like, all right, okay. I don't know how you do that.
Because I am not a big fan, and I think I've said this to you before. You see somebody come into a room and they're dressed head to toe in white, and I always go to my husband, he's dying, she's dying, drives me crazy.
Yeah.
So, I have tried really hard in my horror career not to put people in white. I'll put them in lighter colors like light grays or like pinks. I don't want it to be an instant giveaway. And for me, I love being able to achieve those moments. Like Tiffany, for example, wasn't in a white dress. She was in a peach dress.
Yeah.
Still showed the blood the same,
yeah.
But it wasn't a dead giveaway off the top. The I don't know. I said that to a director once. And,
the virginal yeah. final death, right? Where you're like, okay, we know what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And to it, and we had built, what are those things called? Those little miniature things that you have to build in school when you're a kid. And the art department had built one for each murder so we could see how that they were
oh,
supposed
like a
to
diorama?
Diorama, thank you. A diorama oh, wow. for each murder. Mm-hmm.
That's
and I think
fun.
You see flashes of them in the beginning, flashes of the dioramas where people have died.
Oh,
or
like
when they die.
In the title credits?
No, right before they die or right after they die, I think there are some flashes. I'll have to watch the film again. I've seen it a couple times, but I'm not remembering. But we got to create the little people that went in the diorama and build the costumes that went on them too. So we all knew what it was going to look like.
How tough is it building a costume like 1/10 the size?
It's hard. It's hard. But it's like they were even smaller than Barbie dolls, but we did it.
How did you do that? I'm curious. How? Like, what?
It's called a glue gun. Yeah, it's a glue gun on a little figure. And we just worked with the art department and helped them with textiles that matched or gave them little pieces of stuff that we had built ourselves. That was a lot of fun.
Do you, it's been a minute since you've done a horror. What was, did you feel at home again? Is it something that you, every time you're there, it's a new beginning, or is it something that you know, because it just seems the most fun, I guess.
It is the most fun. It is the most fun. It's, well, period, costuming period is the most fun for me, no matter what the genre is. I love recreating something that was done years ago. It's my passion. I guess I'm kind of known for the horror, apparently.
Yeah, a few. Resume's got one
day,
or two.
Yeah, Flag Day and Nobody. I was hoping to break out of the horror genre. And I guess I did a little
bit. You
did,
bit. Totally.
Yeah, so, but yeah, no, give me a whole bunch of different things. I don't want to stay totally in horror. I would like to be able to have the ability to prove that I can do anything.
You can. I've watched everything you've done inadvertently, not knowing you were doing it. And yeah, like you can clothe Keanu in a fancy suit as a diamond dealer. You can make Odin Kirk look like, you know, a dad joke, literally kicking everybody's ass. And then you can go and create the stabathon of Totally Killer. And it's completely, it's the yin and the yang. So you do whatever you step into, you do a very good job at separating yourself from every previous piece of work that you've been on. And I think that's why you get phone calls like this, because they're like, she did that and that? Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a spread there. It's not pigeonholing yourself. It's not getting trapped in something. How long was this shoot? Was this a quick one?
Yeah, it was a very quick one. It was, I want to say, beginning to end, 4.5 months maybe, which, you know, I'm getting older. I like the shorter ones.
Yeah, sure.
I look at people that just came off of The Last of Us. I think they shipped like 80 costumers from Vancouver to go work in Calgary. And that was 1.5 years on the same show. And I don't know if I can do those kinds of things. Try.
That's intense.
But maybe I might have to, because series is the wave of the future with streaming. But I did we're talking about Totally Killer. I did Devil
totally.
In Ohio for
Yeah, I saw that you mentioned
Netflix.
That on your page, yeah.
And that was an 8-episode thing project, which I really had a great time on working with Daria Politin. She's a wonderful writer. And that was probably one of my longest things that I'd ever done. But then I did just finished doing Under the Bridge with Riley Keough for Disney+.
Oh, Riley Keough, Elvis's granddaughter, right?
Granddaughter, yeah. So you can imagine what our shoot schedule ended up being like.
Insane. Midnights, early mornings, late nights. I can imagine it was all over the place.
It was all over the place because her mother passed away.
Yeah, that's really...
Yeah, yeah. Very, very sad. But she stuck to her guns and she came back and she did an incredible job, incredible experience. But that was 7.5 months. And I think I I draw the line there.
That sounds so long to be married to a project. Like, I'm thinking about doing one thing at work for 7 months, and it's giving me anxiety right now. Like, I need the change. I can't be married to something that long. That's why I'm not even married, for fuck's sakes. I'm common law. It stems into my personal life.
Well, that's the other thing is I don't live in Vancouver. I live on Vancouver Island.
That's right. Yes. So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a ferry ride for me to get home for the weekend. And thankfully, they like my work enough that I get an apartment and I get to live over there for those 7 months.
Damn straight.
But it becomes an interesting way of life. I see retirement at the end of the tunnel, and I'm just going to keep doing it until I can't do it anymore.
And then you just do it half the time when you're retired, right?
That's right.
Pick up something. Right. You're like, oh, you need a it's 10 grand. I'll make you one dress. Leave me alone.
I hope it comes to that. Yeah.
Let's step aside to Disney for a second. What's it like working for the machine?
For the Mouse House, we call it. Yeah. it's interesting. It was different. It was, they're very involved and there's a lot of approvals. And Stacey Silverman, who's one of the producers, one of the creative producers from Best Day Ever Productions. I love that production name. She and I spent many a night till midnight putting together boards that we would present, because you have to get pre-approvals on everything for the pilot. They kept calling it the pilot, even though we knew we had 8 episodes that we were doing and we had scripts for, I think, 4 of them. So Disney needs to see and before you can do anything. And I was very, very fortunate that they loved what I did and they loved everything that my characters were. It was the Rena Burke story. I'm not sure if you're
tell me about
your
it. What is it?
Audience will. It's dark. So that's the other thing I like to do is I like the true crime, the dark things. Rena
that's
Burke
like Devil in Ohio,
is
right?
Actually, yeah, Devil in Ohio was very dark as well. It's my jam.
You're the least dark person that I've talked to. You have this sunny disposition and you're like, let's go dark. To the true crime murder spree stuff. And I think that's great.
Well, I mentioned to you earlier that I really loved the podcast Smart List, but you know, 9 times out of 10, I got a Dateline episode going in my head while I'm cooking dinner.
You and my wife.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, I've done 4 true crime out here because during COVID, they shut everything down with the unions for 8 months, I think. So I got picked up by the non-unions and I did the Mary Gilbert story and the Jennifer Dulo story, which were for Lifetime. But I loved it because it was true crime. And,
sure.
Yeah.
What like mm-hmm. I've talked to some actors and actresses who've done like who starred in true crime. And I'm just always so curious about reading that script and getting to that character's headspace and. You know, your entire day is based on violence and rape and murder and all this dark shit. Mm-hmm. As a costume designer, do you have to do the same thing to get into a dark place mm-hmm. when you're making this stuff?
I watched a lot of the interviews because with the Jennifer Dulos case, the film was called Gone Mom, and her husband committed suicide when the police were on their way to arrest him.
Wow.
So all of this is in the news. And then, of course, people have all these Facebook pages, people that were friends of Jennifer. They're still trying to find her body. Up until recently, a psychic was brought in because they found the psychic was convinced that there was something in the water behind Jennifer and Fortis's house. They found a bloody rolled up carpet, but there was nothing in it. Jennifer wasn't there.
But they still found something. Still that's crazy. Found.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And then with the Mary Gilbert story, that was the Long Island serial killer.
Oh, shit.
And and what was it, a month ago?
Yeah.
Didn't they found him a month ago. So
I don't know anything about it. I just know he was caught recently.
He was caught recently. I couldn't tell. I haven't had the time to look at. I saw it come through, but I haven't stopped to do this to see who it was. I should. But that was Mary Gilbert was the mother that kept fighting. Because all these prostitutes, young prostitutes, were going missing in Long Island, and her daughter was one of them. So it was a lot of news to answer your question. Dateline has made tons of things. There's other people that have made movies, but it's really watching the news and watching MSNBC. Same thing with Rena Burke, which I just finished, which is a true crime story about a 14-year-old girl that was brutally murdered by her peers here in Saanich on Vancouver Island. A lot of people will remember this because what happened at the time is APEC was going on in Vancouver. So all the world leaders were meeting in Vancouver. And I think it was GQ jumped on a ferry or jumped on a helijet and came over and started interviewing everybody. And Riley Keough's character, she grew up here. I'm forgetting her name. Anyway, the character grew up here and she was here visiting her parents when all this went down. And she was a writer. She was a journalist.
Fuck.
So she wrote a book. I've got so many things going on in my brain right now.
Me too. I get it.
Yeah, so there was a lot of, we watched a lot of Czech news because they were covering everything. She was drowning in the gorge by, there was eight teens involved. Two of them were charged as adults and the rest of them were charged as minors. So their names were never mentioned. But it was a worldwide news broadcast because of APEC and because of all the reporters that happened to be here at the time.
Yeah, you strike when the iron's hot, as they say, and if mm-hmm. you can get the attention, mm-hmm. then all the more better for it. It's interesting that Disney's doing a lot of these, I've noticed recently.
Yeah.
Like Disney, they've got the Starz side of it, they've bought the Fox stuff, so I mean, they've got the ability to do it, but I just didn't think it would be happening so quick. But I'm really glad you get to work on true crime stuff that you love listening to. Like that must be interesting for you, because when you go back and listen to the podcast episode, you're like, I was on set when we were trying to recreate that. Like that must get a
Absolutely.
Little meta for you.
Yeah, very much so. Dateline has actually created an entire series called Island Crime because there's a lot of weird shit that goes on here in Vancouver Island.
I mean, we all know about Piggy's Place, right? The big one from like late 90s, early 2000s. And then I think after that, everyone started to pay attention, being like, BC's not just this beautiful mountain range anymore. Some fucked up shit happens out there.
People go missing here all the time. And we don't know if it's the cougars or is it weirdos that are scooping people.
I want to take it back to Totally Killer for a second. With what was your director's name again? I'm sorry, I forget.
Nahashta Khan.
Nahashta
we called
Khan.
Her Notch Khan.
Notch Khan. That's
Notch,
a great name.
Yep.
What was the working relationship like between the two of you? What was the collaborations like? Like how
I loved her. Well, I would present to her, and one of the reasons that she hired me was because of my experience and she trusted me. And, you know, everybody does their due diligence and speaks to everybody that you've worked with before. And the team from Chucky and the team from Flag Day, the team from Nobody all said, hire her, and Notch trusted them. And she did. At one point after my first costume show and tell, because I'll pull together racks and lookbooks and I'll put a whole room together so that when they walk in, they're like, whoa, this is, I've just walked into the costumes.
You're
of
in the world of.
You're in the world of, yeah. And she looked at me and she said, I trust you. And that's the best thing that a director can ever say to you is that they trust you. And you don't take liberties with that. You work very hard and you make sure that you earn and retain their trust. And Notch and I have had a great relationship ever since. And I consider her a friend.
That's awesome. I like that. It's like a tag team of costume director genius. Before I let you go, because the time has just flown by, I really want to know, we're doing this thing now, whoever we talk to, we want to know what you're watching, what has entertained you, and because you're not working at the moment, fucking horrible, but you're not working, I'm sure you got a lot of time to crush stuff, so what are you watching these days?
I've got three things on the go, which
okay.
I know is kind of silly. I am a big fan of BritBox.
Okay.
It's
English
it's,
television.
The British know how to do it. English television.
Yeah.
So I'm watching Unforgotten. I'm just into season one. I went back and my husband and I started watching Bosch, which
is. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Titus Welliver. Really, really well done. But it's. I call it no-brainer TV sometimes. It's at the end of the day and you just want to pop something on. And it's not CSI. It's something
easy
really
watching,
different.
No-brainer background
yeah.
TV. I get it. We have it all.
But it's well done. And lastly, Only Murders in the Building.
Ah. How was Meryl on this season? I haven't watched it yet. I hear she just fucking kills it.
She does. I'm only on episode 4, so I've been holding back on that.
I have heard that there are rumblings that there may be one Chevy Chase appearing in the next season of Only Murders in the Building, and it would reunite.
Oh, yeah.
It would reunite the three of them ever since we haven't seen
the
them.
Three amigos.
With the three amigos, spectacles, testicles, wallet, and watch. Come on now. I don't know. I never knew we loved murder mysteries as much as we love murder mysteries.
Well, and you throw the podcast element into it,
right.
and Selena Gomez. Oh my gosh, it's well, and Martin Short too, and Steve Martin, who are essentially just playing the jerk and whoever Martin Short is.
Whatever day it is, he's different. Yeah, somebody gave him shit the other day for being not funny, and I was like, how dare you take a stab at one of our favorite Canadians? Like, get fucked, buddy.
Well, when you get to watch the third season of that show. You know how he's got the scarves that he always wears.
Yes.
He's now calling them my neck cloths. So now forever a scarf is going to be a neck cloth to me. Yeah.
Me too. Me too. Shauna, pass the neck cloth. What is that? It's a scarf. Just give me my neck cloth. Patty, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Thank you for reaching out. It's been a pleasure.
Well, when you posted that on was it my Instagram or something, I thought, you know what, I'm gonna take him up on that because I've got something coming out.
Yeah, whenever you got something that you're working on, I'm always down to talk about what you do. Like I said, I grew up in a sewing room, but costuming and music complete almost everything that I love truly deeply in my heart. So getting to talk to you and pick your brain, it's always a blast.
I appreciate that you appreciate costuming and that you understand. You're one of the few that understands the work that goes into it. It's not just going to the Bay or Nordstrom or what have you and going like this. There's so much more to it, but I appreciate it.
Listener, if you want to watch the movie, it's on Amazon Prime right now, Canada and America. It'll be in the show notes. We'll put the link up there for you as well. You can go check out Wildwood Rose, which is Patty's vintage shop. So if you're out in the Vancouver Island area and you want some vintage clothing, there's nobody better to take you down that journey than Patty Henderson. Patty, say bye to everybody.
Bye-bye. Thanks for having me.
If you have any problems, dial information. Thank you for calling.